Well, look at this. Come on, please. How nice of you to come over. Rahm Emanuel's here, the mayor of the city of Chicago, for another few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here. And you invited me on your podcast, which is immensely popular. Are you going to continue that after you leave office?
I'm thinking of doing it. We have a colleague of yours in the media world, at least, a journalist, Chris Jones.
Uh-huh.
Just had him on. We had Ben Bernanke on, Stan McChrystal recently.
The lineup's great. I mean, I really mean that with all sincerity.
Does that mean we're doing podcast dating, you and I?
A little bit, yeah.
One of us could run for nominee president. We're partners now.
Yeah, we said, well, maybe we'll see each other again.
Yeah.
So you simply Google
I'll remember your name in the morning.
I hope so. I hope you don't need time apart. Google up Rahm Emanuel Podcast and you'll find
Chicago Stories.
Chicago Stories as well. I got to ask you about a news story, because we were just talking about it off the air. Mm-hmm. The bridge issue, how did that come apart where we noticed, well, there's a couple of cracks in the Lakeshore Bridge?
I'm going to give the workers get all the credit. You know, now they were out replacing lights that had gone out, and they saw the cracks and called it in to the other members of the Department of Transportation that we have a crack here. Upon inspection, not only is the crack you can see, we found another one. They put it temporary, so I'm going to go from here, thank the workers, check it out, and see that what they've done both on our temporary security, pushing that bridge back up the 2 to 3 inches.
Right.
But this is classic city workers doing their job, looked over, saw the problem. Last inspection, I think, was a year ago, which is meets the requirement. There was due, I think, another in June. This would not have made it to June, and thank God they were there replacing lights.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Right place, right time.
Right, why some of us have been advocating for an investment in transportation, Bill?
Right?
Yes.
All right, so I wanted to hit that
later.
This
is last done in the 80s.
But let me bring it up now, because since we're talking about it, the infrastructure thing should have been easy. It should have been the first thing after Trump was elected.
Yep.
He
would have divided Democrats. Democrats, some would have said, okay, I'm in, and others would have said, you know, resistance at all costs. It would have been politically and policy-wise the right thing to do rather than what he did.
Well, you know, I was in Minneapolis for years, and that bridge that went down in Minneapolis, where we got very lucky that a lot more people didn't die, I thought that'd be the wake-up call that everybody jump on this. Why would infrastructure wait this long? What do we need another tragedy?
Political courage. You got it ready. You got to tell the public the truth. You can't do this on the cheap. It's going to take an increase in the gas tax to do it, and it takes political courage to say that. And to be upfront, now the president's all hung up, which I'm for, on environmental studies, et cetera. But if your deficit is $1 trillion, no environmental simplification is going to get you, or regulatory simplification is going to get you $1 trillion.
Right.
It's just not.
Right.
And that's a smokescreen for dealing with the real thing. You have to level with the folks to get from here to there. X miles of more paved road, X miles of modernizing your public transportation system is going to take an increase in the gas tax. There will be other ways you could do it, some public, private, et cetera. It's not one thing, but the big thump, the big hammer, and it takes money. You can't get from here to there on the cheap. We've tried that for 30 years, and now you got the product of 30 years of starving.
Well, in about 10 minutes, we're going to be in 2020, and everybody's going to lose whatever minimal courage they had before. So that's my concern. And I know you share the same concern.
We got
lucky here. Is it going to take a bridge to collapse with a school bus on top of it?
Here's the other thing. I mean, I don't want to, in my tenure, we got a lot of money out of the Department of Transportation when my good friend Ray LaHood was there,
sure,
et cetera. I've advocated to our new governor, you're going to have to deal with this deficit. I tried to get Governor Rauner. He refused to do it. Said, I'm not for the gas tax. And here we got lucky. I'm not holding up much hope for Washington. I'm hoping that Illinois joins the other 24 states. Indiana just did this. Michigan just did it. It's not like people are going to run over to Indiana by gas because they risk raise their gas tax. So this is the right thing to do. You're going to have to tell people. It's going to shorten their commute times. There are going to be direct benefits. But you have to level with them. You can't do this on the cheap. We've tried that. I think it's been almost 25 years since we raised it here in Illinois, and we've tried the anorexic approach to investing in transportation.
Right.
My view is we should try the robust, full buffet.
And Get it done.
I'm trying to use terms that you would appreciate there, Steve.
Well, not as much as I used to, as you know.
You look good.
You know, the thing that is endlessly frustrating for people is, you know, there's people that got a leak in the roof. So what do? They fix the leak.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that they elect to represent them are not going to fix the bridges they drive to get home, or their kids are. Again, I don't know what it's going to take.
No, I mean, we've...
And it's both parties.
Oh, I mean, no. This, when it comes to courage?
Yeah.
Or lack thereof?
Or lack thereof.
Yeah. Look, we did, 2 years ago, a fee on rideshare that goes into 25 cents that goes right into mass transit.
Right.
And it's led to... 5,000, we're in the process of 5,000 new high-definition security cameras and guaranteeing we're going to take 5 minutes off everybody's ride with slow zone fixes, electrical, others, not the sexy stuff, but the block and tackle making the trains run. I take, the train 3 times a week. Those are the type of investments. But X percentage of people take rideshare, Y percentage of people take mass transit. And everybody was for it. I wouldn't say everybody. More people were for that because there was a fraction of the people paying for it. The same with the old gas tax. We need to be honest, and I don't want to harp on it. I know it's unpopular.
You got to do what you got to.
But I said it. I was for this when I was not retiring earlier in politics, and it's just the right thing to do. And you're going to have to do it. And one little fact I saw when we were investing in our infrastructure at take the 60s, 3% of our GDP went into spending on transportation. Our economy was averaging growth at 3%. In the 80s, when we went down to 2% going towards transportation and infrastructure investment, our economy averaged around 2%.
I see a trend.
Yes. Ready? You're third. Ready? Here it is. When we started investing a little out of 1% of our GDP towards infrastructure, guess what the economy grew at?
Go around 1.
Yeah. It's a good
right?
U.S. history.
Yeah.
To president.
Just a pretty face.
Yeah.
I pay attention.
So here it is. You know, there's a reflection. And if you really want to kind of juice the economy pass and keep, let's say, 2.5 to 3% growth, and that means all the jobs that come with it. And remember, you can't export this to China. India can't do this. Only we can put Americans to work
right.
doing this.
Right. And there's an opportunity for a huge
big,
win.
Big time.
You know, I want to jump around a little
okay.
bit and
sure.
not ask the same questions that you get asked every single day. But the one question I get asked.
When are you going to take
your,
the garbage out?
Here's a question I get asked more often than anything else, because people hear you on the show.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know how much I appreciate the access, and I think it's
yeah.
important. But aside from the fun that we have. But everybody, why? Why is he not running? Why would he give it up? Rahm Emanuel seems like a guy who's going to miss this immensely. Now, I think you'll miss it.
Totally. I don't need to leave to tell you I will miss it.
Right. But the answer that you gave me the day after you announced, I assume, is the same. Why you're is it to why you're not running? Why you left?
Well, you tell me what I said.
You said I've done this. This for all these years.
Here's
I want some time with my wife. I want some time to myself. It's time.
Yeah, I would add this. Amy and I are still young enough to go do some other things. But the other thing is, I've been in public life 24 years. Six of the last 16, I ran for Congress in 2002. 2004, I became chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee to take the House back. 2006, 2 years after that, I became caucus chair because we won the majority. 2 years after that, I became President Obama's chief of staff, and 2 years after that, I became mayor. And as you know, the last 10 of those were kind of I don't remember the budget really being balanced here. What I wanted
not so much
the school. Yeah, so there was a lot of challenge turnarounds the last both for President Obama and here. And the truth is, on the next 4 years. I had about a year and a half of energy in me. And Chicago is not, it's not Tucson or Phoenix. It's Chicago.
Right.
And I owe the public the honesty that they need a 4 years out of me, not a year and a half out of me of the four.
So do you need time to recharge and you'll jump back in?
I'll think about it.
There's no no there.
Oh, I'm going to come back to public life at some point.
Okay.
What it will be, I don't know, but it's not. Not in the immediate future. I need some time, to recharge, Amy and I. I need some, the other piece of this is I also want some time to think about, I think we're at a unique, I wouldn't even call this a moment because one thinks it's passing. I think there's something more fundamental happening. United States not alone. It's happening in the major developed economy. And we got to think about what are the right solutions to these challenges and these opportunities. And I want some time to really kind of put my thoughts together.
Because in the course of doing the mayor's job every day, you don't have time to big picture all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you don't.
I mean, unless it's on your agenda for that day, you don't have time to think about it.
And you know how, I mean, long term, like you've heard me about, we've taken the school system from first grade to high school and made it a pre-K to college. I still think that will stand the test of time, be the right thing to do.
Some of the great generational changes the city
said. We added, in my tenure, 4 years of additional educational time to a child.
It's tremendous.
That will never change as being. But there are other things as it relates to other elements of people's economic and social security. And I don't mean social security, meaning the program. Their own cultural security, et cetera, family security, that maybe old policies don't actually scratch the itch.
Right.
But look, let me give you an example. Our unemployment today in Chicago is the lowest it's ever been. Our employment is the highest it's ever been. Poverty rate dropped by 18% when the country dropped by 12%. Yet I think there's a period of angst. And those metrics are supposed to give people some, I wouldn't say tranquility, but some sense of satisfaction historically. It hasn't. So something else is driving this, and I want to think about it. I want to take some time, and you can't do it when you are running
right
at full speed.
And running a city this size.
Yeah. But I love public policy. I love government. I love politics.
Well, you mentioned the governor. The governor comes in mm-hmm. here with Pritzker, we're talking about now,
yeah.
with a pretty significant job to do.
He's got to turn around like I did.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I know you have a good relationship with him. And by the way, remind him he should do the show as well.
But do I get a fee if I could
deliver him? A finder's fee. Yeah, but not until you're out of office, because otherwise it'd be an issue.
I can't wait to tell the Inspector General. Cochran's the one that brought it up. I didn't have anything to do with it.
Right, and I told him not until April.
Joe Ferguson, go to the tape, play it. He was the one that offered me a finder's fee.
Right, there's no way it can't be.
I just want to know, in Yiddish, when we say bubala, booby, that usually means translated 10%.
Oh, 10%? I had no idea.
Booby means, I know that means my loved one,
yeah.
but if you read it from left to right, not right to left, it means
10%. Yeah.
Okay, booby.
So booby plus. If there's an inflection with that, it could get really expensive.
My bubble.
So should the governor stay out of Chicago's business more than Chicago should ask for stuff from the governor?
That's a great question.
Yeah, and I don't think you've been asked it lately.
Well, I'm going to get myself in trouble.
What are they going to do, fire you?
No, I somewhat think that we think about this slightly wrong. So let's step back.
Okay.
One way is I always say that I am going to get myself in trouble. So the mayor is the governor of Chicago, and the governor is the mayor of downstate.
Okay, the rest of the fair enough.
If you really think about power, what they do, etc. Now, the good news is, and I think this is true not just because JB and I have a friendship. The first expansion of early childhood, JB Pritzker backed up the bond so I could do it.
Yeah.
He and MK personally.
Right.
So he's totally into a big policy that he and I share. Okay. Here's my thing. I know the politics, and our last governor did this all the time, of trying to slay Chicago so you could build political support in the collar counties downstate. I get it. But you are then messing with the economic engine of the state.
Right.
I mean, in all due respect, Chicago and the metro of Chicago is almost 75% of the GDP of the state. Without it, both culturally, educationally, economically, there isn't a heartbeat that runs the blood through the system.
Right.
I think that it's better that the governor see Chicago as a partner in seeing the economic growth rather than as the thing to be restrained and using it to play divisive politics of Naperville and Schaumburg against Chicago. I think that's a mistake. When I fought Governor Rauner on education, my one admonition to my staff, let us be in the boat with everyone else, not on a raft by ourselves.
Right.
Because if it's Chicago by itself trying to get something, he can play that politics. If we're in the boat with Rockford, Aurora, and Naperville, and and we're with everybody else, you can't play that divisive politics.
Well, what's different about Illinois? Because I grew up in upstate New York as a kid. There were always two New Yorks. There was New York City,
yeah,
and there was upstate. I'm in Ithaca as a kid. I grew up in Ithaca. It's central New York, almost right smack in the middle of the state. There was almost no discussions about, look what Manhattan's doing to us now. There was an understanding that the greater New York State was what it was, but New York was what it was. Nice place to visit. Nice little economic engine for the state. But there wasn't the discussions you hear in Illinois all the time, where there's south of I-80 and the rest north of I-80. Okay. So what is the rivalry always been there?
It always has been there. It ebbs and flows.
It seems worse now.
I disagree. I think that's a...
You think it's better or you think it's the same?
I don't. I actually think it's better under this governor, who understands the fundamentals.
Well, it can be. It's too early, isn't it, to be better?
Yeah, but it is better. I mean, and it's not just because JB and I know each other and we talk to each other every weekend and stuff like that, as we did this weekend on a couple of things. But he actually, there's a premise. He doesn't think if Chicago fails, the rest of Illinois does well. He knows that if Chicago succeeds, this has to be part of the overall. And like I said to him on certain things, we are going to be, you know, when you come up with what you're doing on where you're going to invest money and how you're going to come up with the revenue, you know, Chicago's part of that. And we just want to seat at the table and not become your ATM machine to spend resources everywhere else. So take the education fight. Illinois, Chicago, never, ever got any assistance on paying teachers' pensions like the rest of the state, even though we paid income taxes so they could pay Naperville, Libertyville's teachers' pensions. Mm-hmm. And nobody in Chicago had any say in the contracts. Yet we were responsible for our teachers' pensions, and our taxpayers were responsible also for everybody else's. No. And
not
our kids
fair.
And our kids were got the lowest amount of funding of the 50 states back from the state. It's just wrong. And once, because of the leadership in the House and the Senate, we battled the governor, and Chicago now, public schools, not only, and this is what I'm really, really proud of, not only all the academic gains, we added 4 years of educational time, and we're in a surplus for the first time. And so we did. Our financial book was upside down, and our academic book was upside down, and both are right side up, and that was because we were willing to battle the governor and said, treat the children of Chicago and the teachers with the same equality of resources that you treat everybody else. And guess what? That's happened, and you got a surplus, and you continue to get academic
gains. Yeah, and the payoff is a generational
but
payoff.
But I do think...
Because you're not necessarily going to see that
payoff
immediately.
But you know, you guys, I don't mean to say this, the media is, but somewhat Chicago's made, you know, the boogeyman here. And I get the politics of that before, but we got to understand.
You mean Chicago as a city is the bad guy in the state?
Yeah, but my point, dude, first of all, we're a net exporter of resources to the state, not a net importer.
Well, and you know how I feel about the city. I think that's lazy journalism. If somebody goes, Chicago's the bad guy, the rest of the state's the good guy, it's not getting their fair share.
Yeah, but here's the my point is, it used to be, if let's say McDonald's moves to the city, it would be, that's, you know, Oak Brook's loss. No, because McDonald's could kind of move to California. It's not anymore Chicago versus other. It's the Chicago area against the greater Los Angeles area or the greater San Francisco area or London.
It's a net gain for the state that they stay here and they work here and hire here.
And they're recruiting more and more kids to move here. GE Healthcare worldwide left London and moved to Chicago.
Right.
And that's what's happening today in the world. That's really the future. GE Transportation Worldwide left the suburbs of Pittsburgh, came here. Now, to me, that's how we got to start thinking of this. More as a team than animosity between the two.
The business success, I mean, you know, I think it'd be hard to argue with the success that you've had in regards to kids. I know how much kids mean to you. We've talked about it on the air and off the air. I'm the same way. I'm a softer touch than you are. I just want kids.
Not possible.
I want kids to have the same shot that you've had, or I've had, or anybody.
And our
had.
Kids have.
Yeah, that your kids have. My 3-year-old granddaughter. I want her to grow up in a city, in a state, in a country that is going to give her a fair shot at being as good as she can be. So I'm excited about that for all of us, for the greater good. The business side, there's more, you know, anybody will tell you, we see cranes above a major city, that means success. Mm-hmm. And what's happened along the riverfront's a big deal. It's a great, great story. Mm-hmm. The cranes above the city mean that more building is going on. But yet a lot of focus on is we didn't get Amazon. Does that frustrate you?
Well, first of all, I would be let anybody be less honest, and everybody focuses on what we don't get rather than
everybody.
Okay, everybody but my podcast partner. That's I'm going to start calling you my partner.
Well, I think we do have a responsibility to be positive when there's positive news.
I just want, here's the thing. Chicago, for 5 consecutive years, is the number one city for corporate relocations
right.
in the United States of America. for 6 years, it's the number one city in the United States and fifth worldwide for direct foreign investment. Now, that's a $4, $5 trillion market, buying apartment buildings, hotels, office buildings, putting a plant, putting a headquarters worldwide. Can go anywhere. We're fifth in the world.
It's a big
deal. London, Paris, Singapore, Amsterdam, not New York, not LA, not Boston, not Miami, not Dallas, not Houston, Chicago.
Right.
To me, you want to say what the problems are? Fine. You might as well also report the success.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's also news. Just because it's positive doesn't mean it's not news. And give people all the information so they can make a judgment, not the information that you think only makes them really, you know, upset and up and upside down. And I don't understand
the position we're in now, where we look for you. Look, I do it as well, but to look for the bad news,
I don't understand. I don't look
here because there's an active effort to look for the bad news to talk about.
Do we have challenges? We have challenges. Okay. Now the fact of the matter is, people did a comparison of the Chicago mass transit system, mm-hmm. which 1 million people a day rely on. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's not like an inconsequential. Mm-hmm. Versus the MTA, which is what the MTA in New York could learn from the CTA and what we've done. You couldn't get anybody here to write about that. It took the New York Times to write about that. The New York Times wrote a story off of Sean Reardon from Stanford's research about Chicago public schools, saying they're the best urban system and we should watch what Chicago is doing because there's lessons to be drawn. Why does it take a Stanford professor written in another journal to talk about what we're doing here? The Wall Street...
Because you're saying you can say the stuff that's troubling. You can report the stuff but talk about the stuff that's working.
And I'm not saying... Look, you can't hide other problems. You have to deal with them. But not at the exclusion of what's right. And actually, if you want to solve other problems, you're going to have to learn, how did we go from the worst school system to one of the best? What were the lessons that worked? What didn't work? It's not a straight line. And my fact is, for whatever reason, people like, okay, there's a big, like, take the campaign. Or take yesterday, the Wall Street Journal wrote about a community college. Can't get people locally, but take this. There's a big debate going on about, and I get the politics of it, I don't agree with. In the mayoral campaign about all our neighborhoods are suffering. Today, a certain agency put out that the Pullman, with all the companies that we brought, Whole Foods Distribution from Indiana, Method Factory that was going to Michigan, the Walmart Superstore that's down there, Gotham Green, etc., jobs are up and crime's down. That's in a neighborhood. That's not downtown.
Well, but
the rhetoric is, the whole neighborhoods are falling apart. They're actually... It's more nuanced than that. There are some doing really... There was a story in the other day, was it Cranes? The most successful residential real estate market of the seven neighborhoods, six are in the South Side.
If I had asked you,
where South Side, North Side...
No, I would have said that because I pay attention, and here's the thing.
But why is it so...
Four or five or six, maybe up to a dozen neighborhoods that are really struggling, 99.9% of the people in those neighborhoods want the same thing the people in Lake Forest and Naperville want.
Absolutely.
And those neighborhoods are struggling. They shouldn't be held up as failures. They should be held up as people that need help, and they should not be representative of the city because they're not, but the rest of us shouldn't sit around and watch them suffer.
But here's my thing, is they are struggling. They've been struggling for decades.
Yeah.
And what I
made... Literally to the late 60s.
Yes. And my point was, and I still believe this, it is not a tale of two cities. It's a tale of one investment and one disinvestment. Nobody flipped the switch in 2011. It happened, the things on the west side, on the south side, have been happening for years and precipitously got worse and worse and worse, and then it started into a snowball. There are certain things happening, like Woodlawn, Bronzeville, Washington Park, Pullman. Population is either stable or going up, and they've turned the tide economically, also property values. What's happening? And then if you talk, you're right, there's 15, maybe even 20 neighborhoods struggling. Why are certain other neighborhoods in the community doing better and not precipitate? And that's how you make smart, informed, intelligent policy decisions. In a couple months, we're going to cut the ribbon on a jewel in Woodlawn. It's the first grocery store in 49 and a half years. It used to be a food desert.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh,
first one.
That.
Okay. I'm going to invite, and it's a, we convinced Jewel to come there. We
that's
made an investment.
That's, okay. That's a great story.
Okay. Why? There's a new school. There's a new park district facility. There's a cleaned up, modernized train station and new housing. So you put transportation, school, park district, housing, and all of a sudden there's now from zero to 100,000 square feet of new retail, coffee shops, restaurants, and a grocery
and
store.
And self-esteem. Their self-esteem, not just for
and population
people,
went up, and safety concerns went down. That is repeated in Bronzeville, same strategy. That has been repeated in Washington Park. The Pullman Report just came out, the same thing. And so what is actually happening, rather than this broad stroke, all the neighbors, that's not true.
Well, and the thing is, regardless of what people think about politics or if they've got an issue with you, I would like them to
look. I got an issue with me.
Well, yeah, not as much as your wife does. But I would like people to love the city enough to tell the good stories of the city. Now, let me ask you this.
I do think people love the city. Well, we were originally, and actually that's the great beauty of the city, and we wear our Chicago pride. We were talking about, my thing is in the coverage, take the good, the bad, and the ugly, not the bad and the ugly.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
throw
all
the good in.
Yeah.
Give me one that got away. I mean, you're not done with the mayor's office yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's still your gig. Most days, that's good news
mm-hmm.
for you.
Yeah.
Give me one that got away that in your mind, you know, I don't have time to get this done before I'm done.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say got away because I'm not ready to concede that.
Okay.
Okay. But I do know there's X amount of runway left. So we're working on, look, here's, I laid out and gave a full speech about the pensions. So let me, but I want to back up. And I just did that 3 months ago. The operating budget is basically balanced. Basically. There's still some room for some haircuts and stuff like that. But basically, it's under control and managed. And it's not a threat to the overall health and well-being of the economy. Jobs are growing. Companies are moving. You got the basic picture. The pension's not true. As I said in the speech, I laid out a series of steps that I would take. The next mayor assumes office May 20th.
Mm-hmm.
You go right into the summer, and by which means the not only you're putting your government together, you have to have your plan for the budget process starts then, and you have to present it in October. In October, you have to present where you're going to find the resources for $278 million. New dollars.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
And over the next 3 years, you'll have to find another, call it $350 to $400. So before you add a single dollar to after school, summer jobs, mentoring, officers, buying ambulance, anything else, you have to identify $700 million of new revenue.
And know where you're going to get it.
Just for one initiative. And a big city does more than one thing. And so if you want to be the mayor that make sure, you know, I'm proud of what we've done. We've more than increased our summer jobs by 120% with no state or federal assistance. We've done that, not that big, but significant in 125,000 kids now get after school initiative
sure.
time.
Before, but whoever is the next mayor.
Before you make it 125,001,
yeah.
you have to find $650 million for one thing only. And to me, I laid out what I would do, put up the structure, create security bonds, back them up that would lower the payment so that's manageable and also.
So here's a template, and new I don't, mayor, whoever you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not for gambling, but I see the revenue opportunity. I'm not for legalization of marijuana. I have my reservations about both of them, but if they're going to happen, here's what I would do, put the resources there. I don't, in 3 months, there's still something I think I can do, but not totally. And my point is, I try to lay out a blueprint. But I'm also aware that with X amount of time, that's going to really, I've stabilized the pension. It's not sliding precipitously like it was when I got here, but I didn't solve it. And the truth is on everything. I think I've made a dramatic impact on our community college, our schools, on the economic environment of the city. It's not like you solve something. That's
no, this
not
isn't.
The
this isn't.
Is it better off when I handed it?
This
when
isn't
I handed
Chicago it? Fire. This right. isn't Chicago law. You don't get a nice solution after 60 minutes.
No, nobody does.
I get that. Now
I've run my race. I hand the baton. is across a waterfront of areas, is it better than the day I took office than not? And there'll be places where I did much, much better than other places. In other places, it got better. And some places got significantly better. The airport, public transportation, our parks, our schools, our community colleges, our economic investment. There are other places, safety. We've made certain progress, other things we haven't.
Yeah, the police situation, the violence situation, that everybody wants to talk to death. Obviously, there's work that needs to be done there. The Van Dyke sentence, the attorney general is going back after it. I don't know what the legal precedent is there. I don't know if you can do anything about it. And you're really not in a position to answer the question I'm about to ask you. The comfort or lack of comfort with the sentence, or is it not something you can address?
I can't while you're in the middle of a case.
All right, I get it. But the violence thing is one of those problems that will linger as well.
Here's what I know. I think the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, is doing a tremendous job, and here's why. The morale of the force, while growing, is up. They're doing their job. You know,
it's a big deal.
The last 2 years, we've taken a record amount of guns off the street. Last year was 9,600. That's a gun an hour. You know, we're above last year by 200 to 300 guns. So we're exceeding two consecutive years of record in the history of the city. So the troop officers' morale is up while you are simultaneously making fundamental cultural and structural reforms. That's really... If you asked anybody to study that, making big changes and still succeeding, usually those don't go together.
Yeah, you should.
And so I really give Superintendent Johnson, Anthony Riccio, Fred Waller, Barb West, the leadership team and the commanders themselves, if you know them. Amy and I have a party for them after the first of the year, all every year, to thank them because I know what the sacrifice is.
Well, they're the key to the rank and file.
And yes, leadership counts. And... we've had two consecutive years, 30% decline in violence, but nobody walks around and goes in Englewood, I feel 30% better than I did last year. You know, and I know January was right, but what I do know is the trend lines are right, and I know we have a great superintendent who's leading a great department, and the morale is up while we're making fundamental changes that we'll never go back
on.
Well,
so much about the city is positive momentum, and a lot of it has been created. Mm-hmm. I got to take you back to Washington for a second.
Oh, do you have to?
Did you notice I've done 20 minutes without talking about Trump? I thought that would be good news. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even going to bring up Trump yet, because there's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Go ahead.
That I've never brought up.
What?
You have had a very interesting life, in that you've worked with, for, alongside some pretty amazing people in some pretty amazing circumstances. Mm-hmm. Clinton and Obama, two very different people.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a better boss?
Oh, I'm not going to do that. That's not...
Well, I mean, you can grade them in different categories, but just generally speaking, was one easier to work for than the other? Because my thought is, by the time that you became Obama's chief of staff, you had built up so much thump in Washington that it was a different world for you then.
Well, I'm a chief of staff versus a senior advisor. It's totally different. Like, here's the thing. So let me say this. At one level, I learned a tremendous amount for both, and I'm honored to serve both. I probably learned more about politics from Bill Clinton.
Makes sense. Experience.
More about balance and other things and just human thing, other things from Barack. Now, remember, President Clinton and I, who I just talked to last week, we're of different generations. That's not true of Barack and I. Barack and I have, our kids are similar age, so we have other experiences as human beings, just beyond, not as chief of staff and president, not as two people from Chicago, but as fathers. And, you know, the truth is, whenever we get together, the first thing President Obama and I talk about is, you know, our children, our spouses, where our family lives are, et cetera, where everybody is, et cetera. You know, because one of my baby, Leia, who's not a baby, mm-hmm. is going to Princeton where Michelle went. And I thought when she got in, I wouldn't say he was the first phone call. He
wasn't, but it's one of them.
He was a very early phone call to let him know and says, make sure that Michelle knew that this is where Leia was going and stuff like that. So that, we had certain things. On the other hand, you know, President Clinton saw me from single to engaged to married to a father. And he wrote something. If I start talking about it, I'm going to start to cry.
I get it. Something that meant a lot to you personally.
Yeah, when the kids were born, he wrote a letter. That when they had their bar mitzvah, which would be 13 years later, to each of them individually.
Zach, Ilana, and Leah.
They all three. And I think as you walk into Ilana's room, it's framed right there.
What a cool deal that is.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically, we left the White House, and Ilana was 4 weeks old, and he wrote each of them a letter of what their bar and bat mitzvah would be. It was in, and it was, he gave it to me on my way out.
That's goosebump stuff.
And then when Leia was born, I'm sure somebody else, he wrote her a note so she would have exactly what, because she was not born until we were back here in Chicago. So when you say to me,
it's very cool.
And then, you know, so let me give you another anecdote is, President Obama saw, you know, knew Zach was into geography, et cetera, Zach's being bar mitzvahed, et cetera, while we're at the White House when I had to leave his bar mitzvah to do the health care bill. But President Obama asked Zach to come in. Because two things, this is tells you a great story. One is he knew Zach had won the geographic B and went up in the regional, et cetera. And he gave him a beautiful globe that lit up. And it's one of those big, big globes. Now, fast backwards. And it's really beautiful. It was for his bar mitzvah. And it's got a beautiful plaque on it. And it's a tribute from President Obama to him. And about becoming a man and what the bar mitzvah is in the Jewish faith. For some reason, I don't know why President Obama saw this, but I used to, on Saturdays, would take Zach in at President Clinton's office, and he would be with me, you know, 12 months old, 14 months. That's how my fathering was, you know.
Sure.
Here, come to work. You know?
Sure, sure, sure.
Anyway, President Obama saw, and it must have been, it was a big national security meeting because there's the head of the Joint Chiefs, the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, there's Vice President Gore, President Clinton sitting in the chair. I mean, we're all in our kind of Saturday cash, not our suits, etc. And the shot is from behind the presidential and vice presidential chair, right near the fireplace where there's that President Washington oil.
Yeah.
And it's over their shoulders. And if it goes and you can see the desk. And off to the desk is the dog and a globe. And who's standing on the globe? Holding on to the wood of the globe is Zach at like 14.
Oh, come on.
And so President Obama.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, it's a beautiful.
It's a very cool story.
Yeah, and so both of them are, I've learned different things from them. I've been honored to serve. And
special relationships.
And, you know, I torment President Obama because I said, if we're going to have this health care vote, one rule, it cannot be on Zach's bar mitzvah. That's the only rule I have.
Right.
So what day do we have the vote in the House? Literally, he finishes the Torah, the half Torah portion.
Right.
I haul my ass back to the White House.
Right. All I asked was for one thing.
Can I have the Sabbath? You think that's a lot?
All right, listen.
Yeah.
We're going to run out of time.
Okay.
But we got a lot more that I'd love to discuss before you're done. But let's go lightning round here real quick.
Okay, good.
The famous story of your finger.
Yeah.
And Arby's.
Yeah.
Did you eat it in Arby's after that?
And never.
How soon? You've never been
never,
back to
cannot,
an Arby's.
Cannot do it.
Can't go back.
Can't go back.
Do you have any idea what happened to the finger?
Yeah, I did. You know, it was hanging by a thread, and only a doctor son could do it.
Yeah.
Wash it. Really brilliant.
Yeah.
Tie it really tight.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait 48 hours because there's the graduation party. Then you decide to go to the hospital. Mm,
we can't save it now,
no,
can we?
No. Gangrene, 5 blood infections, 2 bone infections, 104.
Lucky to be alive.
Yeah, exactly. Have not been back.
Here's something else.
I love the commercial, though. Who's got the beef?
Everybody, I don't think very many people know this. You were a terrific dancer, and you studied with Joffrey for at least a period
of
time.
No. I had a scholarship to the school and never took it.
Oh, you didn't?
Yes.
But you must have danced to have the scholarship,
obviously.
No, obviously.
I danced, but I never took the scholarship.
Can you still dance?
I could probably take a be really good at a beginner's ballet class. So that's about it.
But we're not going to see on Dancing with the Stars this fall.
No, no. My little one, Leia's at, she's a big dancer, modern dance.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you talked about both kids. What is Zach doing now?
Zach's a senior at UCLA.
That's right. And Ari is representing him at UCLA?
Let me say this. We limit his time with his uncle. It's not good for his education. and we believe, actually, we also limit Ari's time with his own children. We don't think that's good for anybody.
Well, listen, you got to do what you got to do. You're a big bro. And if you were seen in Washington, the stories would start immediately about what you're going to do next, obviously.
Yeah.
If anybody in Washington, any form of power, would they rather get stuck in an elevator with you or Nancy Pelosi?
Because same result. It's just whether you want it in Italian or Hebrew.
So I know you're not going to tell me what you're going to do, but what are you going to do first? What are you going to do?
I'll give you the first month.
Yeah, give me June.
Okay. I'll give you, because I'm actually, it's longer than June. So May 20th, next mayor. May 21st, buddy of mine, or the first couple days, we are going to go counterclockwise, and we're going to ride 75 miles a day and finish the entire circumference of Lake
Michigan.
You're
going to do the circle tour.
I'm going to go around Lake Michigan. I want to see the UP. I want to see the whole thing. I just want to do it.
Cool.
75 miles a day. We marked it out 13 days.
Yeah, well, that's
number
fine.
Two, that's the one friend who was my roommate where I started it all in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Is that right?
Yeah. Number two, and come back about four or five friends. We are going to go up opening day and do fly fishing in Alaska.
You know, the idea of a nice Jewish kid in a river in Alaska is pretty entertaining to me.
Yeah, I didn't think Grandpa Herman moved from Romania all the way.
Wow. Yeah.
And then Amy and I will go to graduation.
Uh-huh.
And then I would like, and I think we're there, is she and I are going to go to the Dolomites in Italy and go spend 2 weeks hiking and stuff like that.
And at that point,
I will come back.
And whatever is next is next.
Yeah, I'll have it before I leave. I'm close, and then I'll put on the pants, the shirt, the tie, although you can tell I'm not wearing a tie, and get back into the groove. But I'm going to take basically 5-6 weeks to put, as I refer to as reentering the atmosphere without my heat shield on.
Is there any chance it'll be a prominent discussion in 2020
No.
of the White House of you helping someone?
No, will not happen. That Okay. You can take off.
Good.
No.
Listen, you know how much I appreciate this.
And I appreciate you.
And I think it's important not just to tell the good stories, but to answer the tough questions. And that's why I always urge Mr. Madigan, Mr. Pritzker, all the Republicans.
Remember what Booby means. Translate it.
But take 10%. Advantage of the access. Take advantage of the access 10%, and talk.
10%.
That's all.
Would you want Booby or Bubba?
Bubba. Yeah, Bubba. Yeah, I like to go good in the hat. My best to your family,
Steve,
and your wife.
Can I,
all the best.
Let me say this. Seriously, if you weren't here, the city would have to invent a Steve Cochran.
Well, you know what? Here's the rest of that story. If I wasn't here, you wouldn't be here. Not in the studio. Thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
You got it.